This is Juno Afternoon, and in case you're wondering what happened in National Native News, we're going to talk about it right now. Here with me in the studio is Cheryl Snyder, Vice President and General Manager of KTOO Music and Arts. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Shelley. So nice to get to be in the studio and on the air with you. We talk all the time off air, but we don't often get to team up on the air together.
I know. This is a first, I'm pretty sure. I don't believe you've ever been a guest on the show, at least when I was hosting.
Yeah, well, it's great, and it makes a lot of sense for you and I to have this conversation about program changes together, because we both worked a lot on a bunch of the changes that our audience gets to listen to this week.
Yeah, and the bulk of them are brand new as of this week, as some of them as of today. So it is very exciting, very fresh, and thanks for coming in today to talk with me and with our audience about the program changes. It's not really something that happens too much, and especially not the big kind of shakeup scale that we have been, that we're implementing right now. But what goes into making programming changes and decisions, big or small, on your end?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple things that can prompt program changes. One of them is that sometimes shows just go away. They stop production. So that was the case with Says You and Ask Me Another. Those were two shows that were really dependent on having live audiences as part of their funding model, and they just couldn't survive COVID. So those shows stopped as of the end of the summer. So we had some holes there that we needed to fill. Sometimes there's just really great new programs that we want to bring on the air. So National Public Radio actually just put out a couple new really great ones that we wanted to bring onto our into our lineup, including Life Kit and
Code Switch,
another show was Throughline. So, you know, we had some holes and we had some new programs that we could work in. But a really big thing that we were doing this fall is we're actually looking at everything we do with what we're calling a racial equity lens. And when I say racial equity lens, what I mean is that we are thinking about all of the content that we're creating, all of the decisions we're making about our organization, and thinking about whose voices are we hearing from, whose voices are not being heard, and really working to make sure that the service we provide truly represents the community in which we live. So with that lens, we started to make some programming decisions, and primarily what you're going to hear is a lot more Indigenous-driven content. So every day, Monday through Friday at 1 o'clock, you'll hear Native American Calling, and that's where National Native News has moved to.
That's right. The newscast is going to be earlier in the day and fresher.
It is naturally intended to air with that program. You know, we'd had it here with Juno Afternoon for all these years, so that's going to be at 1 o'clock, so it's going to be the start of Juno Afternoon. Sounds a little bit different. Another thing that we're doing as we are really bringing in a lot more and deeper conversations on Juno Afternoon, we've been getting a lot of requests from people who are missing it at 3 o'clock and want it at other times in the day. So as a result of listener feedback, we are repeating Juno Afternoon now Monday through Friday at 7 o'clock. So that's another big exciting change. Shelley, do you want to talk about Gunoshtish on Mondays? Because I know you just talked to the host of that program.
Yeah, I interviewed him about the program itself to sort of introduce our audiences to it. But it aired yesterday. That was the premiere. It'll air on Mondays, every Monday at 3 o'clock. And the only reason it wouldn't air is if we had a special Juno Afternoon there for some reason. And then again, 7 o'clock on Mondays, except when there's CBJ meetings or another special program. It's a pretty cool show. The host is a pretty cool guy, and yesterday's episode just featured an hour-long conversation in, I believe it was Tlingit, but he also features Haida and Tsimshian, and occasionally other Alaska Native languages as well. It's a nice blend of conversations, sometimes like archival recordings and music, almost all in Indigenous languages, Alaska Native languages, no translation, and a pretty cool philosophy behind all that as well. And it's to normalize hearing those languages and not a lot of emphasis on the English translation, but just hearing it. He has a good line that he said in the interview that the land wants to hear its languages spoken. Mm. But I don't want to give too much more away. We'll be airing that pretty soon.
That interview. Yeah, that's great. And that show is produced out of Sitka, so it's really nice to get to partner with, you know, another community and bringing some really relevant and important programming to the airwaves. So that's great. A couple other highlights I've already mentioned, but Code Switch and Life Kit, really great shows from from National Public Radio. Code Switch addresses racism kind of in all forms, from microaggressions to really overt racism and how that impacts our daily lives. So that's really great. The other one, you just had Our Body Politic. That's Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock. You also had the opportunity to talk with the host of that program.
Yes. We haven't aired that interview yet either, but we will be airing that soon, again, as a way to introduce our audiences to the show, the philosophy behind it. The host is also the producer. The show is very much her own, with the help of a lot of collaborative team, and it's called Our Body Politic. The host is Farai Chidea, and it is political discussions with women of color about how politics affects every aspect of their lives, and of course also their thoughts, their opinions, the things that they study, their voices. It's a really great program. Actually, I think it's the one I'm looking forward to hearing the most on a weekly basis.
Yeah, so that's Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock. I guess the last couple things we could mention is on 4 o'clock now, that's where we used to repeat Juno Afternoon. Instead of repeating Juno Afternoon there, we've lined up the 4 o'clock hour in Karenin all through the week with a really great new selection of music. Monday through Wednesday is contemporary Indigenous music from some program producers from Native Voice One. So that's really great listening. And then we also have another Alaskan show, Acoustic Accents, comes from a program creator up north. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of great programming. We don't expect you to remember everything that we're sharing with you now, which is why if you just go to our website at ktoo.org, you'll see a link to click on the new program schedule and descriptions of all of the shows.
That's right. Yep. Our calendars are all up to date. Our programming is all hopefully in place. And if not entirely accurate, is in the process of getting adjusted. It might take us a week. So thanks for your patience. And yeah, I also want to mention another program I'm looking forward to on KRNN is the All Songs Considered an Alt Latino Power Hour that we've never done before. We've never aired those two together before like that on KRNN. I think the listeners there are really going to like it.
Yep. That's 4 o'clock on Thursdays, right?
Yep.
Yeah. You know, some of this stuff is so great that I literally have started putting the shows into my weekly calendar so I don't forget. And you might want to do that as well. So again, you can just go to our website. On the homepage, there's a button that clicks to all the links. And I just want to share that, you know, we don't make changes like this lightly. It was hours and hours of work of listening and previewing, taking in community feedback. I had several people listen, you know, previewing shows that seemed interesting. So it was a lot of work to get where we are with the schedule. We hope you love the changes, and we also really invite you to give us feedback as you're listening over the coming weeks and months.
Definitely, definitely. Well, thanks, Cheryl. Anything else you want to share about that?
I think that's it. We've got a fun music bed to go out on.
Yeah,
right?
you want to set it up?
Yeah. So this is by Supa Man, and the song is "Know Better, Do Better." I thought that would be appropriate as we are growing as an organization, as we are knowing more, we are trying to do better. So "Know More, Do Better." And I also specifically chose this artist because he is participating in the Rock Ock Festival, which is happening this weekend. It's an event of the Jack. It's a totally virtual Indigenous Music Fest, so you can check that out at rockawk, spelled AAKW.com.
Yeah.
.org.
We're all super excited about Rockawk over here. So here's Supaman, "Know Better, Do Better." Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. You've probably seen a lot of Jessica Hanlon's work around town already. She's the artist and owner of Frost and Fur, an eco-conscious silkscreen company. But she's also a watercolor artist, and her vast body of work will be celebrated in an exhibit at the Juno Douglas City Museum this first Friday. She joins us now. Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
Hi. And also here is Alyssa Borges, curator of public programs for the City Museum. Hi, Alyssa.
Hi there.
Thanks, both of you, for being here with me today. Jessica, let's start with you. Tell me about your career as an artist. How did you get started? How did you get into sustainable silkscreen design and all of that?
So I went to college. I grew up here in Juneau. I really was involved in some art programs that the high school here had. Then I went to college and I thought I was going to be a chemistry major. And about 2 years in, I decided that I wanted to pursue art. And I was thinking I would eventually do something with art therapy. But I went to school for art. I came back to Juno and I had a couple solo art shows here. then life took me to California, and I didn't do any of my own art in that whole 8 years that I was in California, but I worked at a friend's silk screening company, and I had done silk screening in college. It had been my primary art medium that I like enjoyed the most in college. I did, I think, 4 different types of silk screening classes. So the opportunity to work at somebody's clothing store popped up, and I took it, and I became one of their primary screen printers. And then I moved back to Juneau, and I randomly got asked to be a part, to have a piece of art in a group show. And I took it, and I hadn't ever watercolored at this point. My college didn't offer it. And I had watercolors, and I was like, what can I do quickly? And so I painted a fish, a salmon, and it turned out better than I expected. And it was, ended up going really well. And then I ended up having my own watercolor show within the next year. And Frost and Fur happened sometime around that period of time as well. And it's been a few shows since then, and now we're here.
So all of the graphic designs on the Frost and Fur clothing, are those all your designs, or at this point are you working with other artists as well?
No, those are all mine. The company I worked for in California, they didn't use any of their own art. They used a lot of clip art, and I sort of made it a personal mission to make sure that all of the art was original, and at this point it's all been mine.
And you have a focus on sustainability and using eco-friendly materials. Does that apply mm-hmm. to the clothing itself, the inks that you use, or all of it?
The clothing is as eco-friendly as I am able to get my hands on, and all of the two companies that I source from make sure that they are socially responsible with their production and sourcing as well, and that's important to me. And then the inks are all water-based and non-toxic, and then we filter our water before we let it go down the drain.
That's great. And before we move on to talking about your watercolor exhibit, I did want to give you the opportunity to plug your new store, which is down on the wharf. I saw the sign in the window today. What's happening there?
We were given the opportunity to have a holiday pop-up market in the wharf. And so we jumped on it and spent a week scrubbing floors and painting walls, and had a soft opening last week just to make sure we were really ready for the holiday season. Then we sort of put it to bed for this week in preparation for my show at the museum, and we'll be back next Friday down at the wharf.
Your exhibit at the City Museum is titled Mountains, Seas, and Spirits, and the opening reception is this first Friday, November 5th at 4:30 p.m. at the City Museum. Tell us about these paintings.
Yeah, it's actually both watercolors and I haven't done fine art silk screening since college, so I sort of used this as an opportunity to push myself and do a few serigraph pieces. So gosh, I didn't make a count, but I think it's like 6 serigraph pieces. Serigraph is like fine art silk screening, and then the rest, what is it, like 21 pieces are watercolors. And they're primarily animals, fish, and at a previous Jack show, I started doing portholes. So the other pieces are those.
Portholes? Can you say more about that?
Yeah. At the time, 3 years ago, I was commercial fishing with my partner, and I sort of needed a creative outlet during the fishing season. And so I started painting, not like the exact likeness of the water, but sort of just the general feeling that the water gave me while I was out there. So we'd be fishing, for example, near Sentinel Island, and I made a circle with a plate that we had on board, and I started painting colors, waves, and just not, like I said, exact representations, but just sort of like the general feeling that the water gave me. And so that was while I was fishing 3 years ago. And since then, I've been pregnant and had a baby, and I didn't get to go fishing this year, but my partner would send me photographs of like morning, noon, and night. And so I've sort of incorporated those in some new pieces.
That's great. And how would you describe one of your favorite art pieces or favorite watercolor paintings that we might see on Friday for those who's never seen your work before?
I think with watercolor animals in particular, my favorite thing about it is that I can just sort of capture in a watercolor, like a moment as if you had run in. There's a picture, or there's a piece in particular that we used for the poster. It's a bear, and it's a bear looking through grass leaves. So it sort of feels as if you just sort of stumbled upon this bear. And I think that's sort of always what I hope for when I'm painting an animal, is that it's like, oh, you could actually feel that moment. So
you can get a little peek of the bear and a little peek of Jessica Hanlon's work on our website, ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. And of course, the reception is this first Friday. Jessica, is there anywhere else online where we can see your work?
Yeah, I have a personal watercolor website. It's jessicahanlon.com. And my silkscreen business, is frostandfur.com.
All right. Well, I really hope you enjoy the reception this first Friday at the City Museum. Turning to you now, Alyssa, the City Museum has quite a bit going on for the month of November. What would you like to highlight?
Yeah, we do. Before I move on to our programs for November, I just want to say that this first Friday opening reception is a little different than the past due to COVID, so we will not be serving all the refreshments as we normally have, and masks will be required at all times. But we're very excited to have art in the museum again, and it's going to be a great show. Her exhibit has been extended through December 31st, so if people can't get to it this week, we've got a nice long time to come and see it.
Have you seen it yourself yet, Alyssa? What's your opinion of the work?
Oh, I love it. I got to see it today as it went up on the wall, and I just love the poster. I love that bear, peek a bear.
Me too.
And I totally agree with Jessica that you do feel like you're having an encounter with the animals. They're just very expressive and close up, and I really, really enjoy her style. It'll be a fun show.
That's great.
So moving on to programs this month, we also have our annual writing letters of gratitude in honor of the late Dr. Walter Sobeloff. This year, as we have in the past, we give away free note cards, free postage, and a little insert so that people can write a letter of encouragement to someone in their life. That you can also get the cards and the postage through the to all Juno public libraries this year. But this is something that we just love doing. It's just an opportunity to express some loving kindness, support, and it really embodies what the late Dr. Walter Sobeloff stood for. And he, in case people don't know, every year November 14th is Walter Sobeloff Day. And so we just kind of use the whole month to remember him and, you know, support those around us in the way that he did. So we hope people swing by during our open hours to get those free note cards. There's several to choose from. And the postage stamp this year is the Raven postage stamp. So it's kind of extra special.
The Rico Worrell Raven stamp?
Yes, that one. Yeah.
Nice.
Also this month, we have on November 13th, we have Poetry in the Time of COVID, which is the Byrne Thompson Memorial Writing Group. They do a presentation every year, and this time they have a collection of poems they wrote during COVID, and they will have a chapbook that is available for purchase for those that are interested. Also, because of COVID, we won't have a sit-down event. This is going to be a recorded, looped poetry, so you can hear the poems, you can pick up a book, and we won't be gathering as a big group, but it will be from 10:30 to noon, so people can swing by and hear those poems during that time. And then finally, each month we have a free little art gallery challenge, and this November's challenge, this is for our little outdoor free little art gallery where you can put something in, take something out. We're challenging people to make a very small piece of art. We have materials here that you can come and get a little, about 1.5 by 1.5 square canvas with a little magnifying glass and some instructions. So we're having a lot of fun with that. We've already received some great little tiny pieces of work based on this challenge. It's so much fun to see what people make. And then finally, just to let people know that free admission has begun. We are back to that. And this month's sponsors are Don and Elmo Harris. So come to the museum. We've got lots of great art, fun little challenges to do, and it's all free.
That is great news about the free admission. I'm very happy to hear that. It's so nice to know that the City Museum is so well supported, especially because you guys do so much great stuff. So thank you, Jessica, and thank you, Alyssa. Do either of you have anything else you'd like to share before we say goodbye?
I don't. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
All right. Until next time, and have a great time this first Friday with your exhibit, Jessica.
Thank you.
This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. It is not easy to navigate social service programs for seniors, but some of that will be mapped out this month in a caregivers education series that will be offered by Southeast Senior Services. So joining us now to talk about that, we have Denny Darby, Family Caregiver Support Advocate and Speaker Series Moderator. Hi, Denny. And Jennifer Carson, Hospice and Home Care of Juneau and panelist speaking on home care in Southeast. Hi, Jennifer. Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi.
And then we have another Jennifer joining us, Jennifer Garrison, Caregiver Support Regional Coordinator and Bridge Adult Day Program Manager, also a panelist speaking on caregiver support. Hello, Jennifer G.
Hello.
Well, thanks for being here. And as I mentioned, you're all here to talk about an education series for caregivers. Who would like to give me a general overview of this program and how it came to be?
I think that would be me. Normally, November is National Caregiver Month. And normally what we have done in the past is host a live education series at the library. But because of COVID, we've had to adapt. And so this year we're attempting to do this through a webinar. So what we have is starting tomorrow and throughout the following 3 weeks after tomorrow, we will have a series of speakers speaking on various topics. For instance, tomorrow is our panel, Jennifer Garrison and Jennifer Carson, and also Eileen Hosey, case manager for Southeast Seniors. And we will discuss how Southeast Seniors work, the different programs of Southeast Seniors and Hospice and Home Care, and then some of the major issues that come through as I manage the resource center here. And so I get calls from all over Southeast Alaska, people asking questions on various topics from how to take care of an elder to needing help with shoveling snow. So it's just kind of an overview. And then the rest that will tee off the rest of the education series. We will have Laura Wyman, who will talk about dementia. And then we will have Beth Chapman, who will talk about legal issues. And then finally, we will have Amber Smith of the Alzheimer's Resource Center. So it's going to be exciting and entertaining. And I think everybody will really get a lot out of it.
Turning over to the Jennifers now, sorry. We'll start with Jennifer C. What is your role in this series and how did you become a part of it?
Yeah, so I'm the Director of Hospice and Home Care here in Juneau. And so my role really is to talk about how people can start home care or hospice services here in Juneau, what that takes, what it looks like, what our services provide to the community. Also talk about our newest program, which is Friends of Seniors. It's a volunteer-based service providing non-medical services to individuals 60 and older living in our community.
And Jennifer Garrison, how about yourself? What is your role in the series and how did you become a part of it?
Well, I'm the regional coordinator for the Caregiver Support Program, and I also manage the Bridge Adult Day Center. So I'm going to be talking about some of the services that Southeast Senior Services has to offer. things we do here at the Bridge, and also the Family Caregiver Support Program. That's where we provide grant money for caregivers to help support them in their duties as caregivers.
Got it. Got it. Are either of you involved in tomorrow night's talk, which is the sort of the kickoff of this series?
Yes.
Yes, you both are. And Denny, how about yourself?
Yeah, I'll be moderating the panel. And what we'll be doing is just kind of talking about some of the major questions that come in through the Resource Center. People have all kinds of ideas about what we do or what we don't do. So it's just a kind of a panel to help educate the viewers in Juneau and throughout all of Southeast Alaska on the services that we can offer.
That all sounds terrific. And it's starting tomorrow afternoon, I believe, November 3rd at 4 p.m. over Zoom. And you all three will be a part of it. I know that tickets and registration are not required, but how can folks sign up to watch?
There's several ways. The best way is to go to our website. And if you go to the website, there will be a big button in kind of the upper right-hand corner that will say Caregiver Education Series. You click on that button and then just go through the prompts. In addition, we also have, when we sent out the promo to all of Southeast Alaska, we sent log-on instructions. So there are actually practice times. If people, for this week, it would be difficult, but every Friday at noon from 12 to 12:30, we kind of host a practice webinar because we realized that many of the seniors in Southeast Alaska logging onto a webinar, it may be the first time that they do this. So if anybody wants to log on, if they have any questions, they can call me tomorrow and I can work them through that before the webinar begins.
That's great. Well, we'll definitely go over phone numbers and contact information before we say goodbye today. And I appreciate that all of you being so available for folks who need help. So getting into the session for tomorrow, the first session of the series, and it's called Navigating Senior Services. What do you think folks who attend will be most surprised to find out about navigating senior services? Is it easier than you think? Is it harder than you think? Is there a lot of red tape? Is there a lot more resources available than people think there are? I'm just kind of thinking of myself. If I attended this webinar, I wouldn't know anything. So I would have a lot of questions. I wouldn't even know where to begin.
I think that people will find it's a lot easier than they think to get help, to get assistance. It's not, most of our programs aren't based on income, so that's not an issue. We help everybody that we can with the grant money we're given. So we kind of try and spread it around and make sure everyone gets the help that they need.
What would you add to that, Jennifer Carson?
For hospice home health, I think it's a little different. We work really closely with medical providers in town to get services started because we are a medical-based type service. But I think one of the things that people will be surprised at is how much charity we provide to the community, and that we never charge anybody for services that aren't covered by insurance, and that sometimes can be very surprising to individuals. Especially when we are a medical provider.
And Denny, how about you? Would you add anything to what they just said?
I think one of the big things would people just know that we're here. I think one of the biggest challenges is getting the word out that we exist. And just the deep commitment that everybody that I work with, the lengths that my coworkers are willing to go to help people. And so I think that, and also what's exciting about this again is that all of Southeast will be able to tune in. And previously it had just been held in Juneau. So by holding it virtually, hopefully we'll reach more people. And some of the people in the outlying communities who really thought they were on their own will find that there is support for them.
Now I know this is maybe one of the first times you've hosted this online. In the past, would you say that seniors take the initiative to educate themselves? You were mentioning these practice webinars where you'll help people log on who maybe don't have any experience doing that. Even though this is geared towards caregivers, do you find that seniors themselves have are interested in learning about this stuff for themselves and take a lot of agency in their own care?
It really depends. I mean, it really runs the gambit. We have seniors who are really on top of things, and they're very proactive in contacting us and asking for help and actually working with us, you know, to get the help that they need. So it really depends. What we do know about, you know, considering that we're working with many people in their 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, that, you know, computers are really, for some of them, very new. And so that's why we added the log-on instructions. But we have people that are very savvy and then other people that aren't. It's just like normal people, I guess, or younger people, a better way to put it.
I can only imagine what the tech is going to be like when I have to navigate it in my own old age. Probably something that hasn't even been invented yet. Well, I think it's great. It's a great thing for the community, for our seniors and our elders here in Southeast. I really appreciate you all coming on today to talk about it. Let's go over the details again about where we can find out more information, where we can get the link, maybe good websites and phone numbers for you.
If anybody has any issues or any questions, they can call me, area code 907-463-6181. And Jennifer, I don't know the website. What exactly is the website address?
CCSAK.org.
And that's where we can get the link to watch the webinar.
There should be a link on there.
Yeah, there's a link. On our website and on our Facebook page, I believe.
Okay, so again, the first session, Navigating Senior Services, takes place online tomorrow, November 3rd at 4 p.m. over Zoom. What are the topics for the following weeks?
The following week, we'll have Laura Weinman. She's a published author. She's really well known in the community dealing with aging and dementia. And she's really excited to talk. She really wants to change the whole conversation about dementia, to think about dementia and aging in a different way. And she's very passionate. And then the following week, again, is Beth Chapman. And she'll talk about legal issues, because that's one of the main problems that we have, is that a lot of people just are not prepared for growing older, and or the person that they're caring for. They just kind of find it comes upon them without being prepared. And then finally, again, Amber Smith of the Alzheimer's Resource Center of Alaska will spend some time talking about Alzheimer's and dementia the last week.
Great. And I think we plan to have some of those folks on our shows in the coming weeks so we can find out more in detail. Denny Darby, Jennifer Carson, and Jennifer Garrison, thank you all for sharing your expertise with us today and for taking the time out to tell us about this series of talks. It's a lot of important information for caregivers to know, so we appreciate that. And we've got the phone number 907-463-6181 or the website ccsak.org to find out more. Thanks again, everybody.
Thanks for having us.
This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. My next guest is Sarah Lewis. She teaches a popular series of food preservation courses on Tuesday nights, and she joins us now to tell us about what's coming up this month. Hi, Sarah.
Hey, Shelley. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Awesome. So, yeah, you're right. So I've been doing some food preservation classes on Tuesdays. That series is coming close to its end, so I'll talk about what's coming up next after that as well. But this series has been called Winter is Coming, and so it's been focusing on preserving food that I guess technically can get you through the winter, or can keep you occupied through the winter and keep you healthy through the winter, all that kind of stuff. So tonight's class is dry mixes and sourdough. And I think you can only register for it until 4 o'clock today, then it will close. But you can go to Juno. The best way is to Google Juno Extension, and you'll go to the calendar and you can see the class for tonight, but then you can also see the remaining three classes that are coming up. I have a pickling class and a canning vegetables and meat class, and that's a pressure canning class. And the final one is making jerky. And so those are the next few Tuesdays. So those are kind of fun. You can cook along with me, or you can watch me cook while you eat your dinner, or you could, I have been recording those, and those recordings are available for 1 week for people who register in advance. So you can watch later if you need to during the week. So it's been popular, and it's been pretty fun. They're $10 each. And so it's a pretty easy way to get some good ideas for preserving food.
Well, $10 each is a steal. And I think we should just mention, because I don't know if we said it already, these are all online classes.
Yes, these ones are all online. I'm cooking from my kitchen to yours.
And it's so nice to be able to attend from the convenience of our kitchen. Are you having a pretty good turnout for these courses so far?
I do. I have had a very good turnout for these courses, and actually a pretty good mix of folks who do come and do the Zoom class, or at least watch it. And so that's pretty great. I like the Zoom classes a lot, but I'm also looking forward to getting back to some in-person classes. I plan to continue doing Zoom. I plan to do both, because different people like to learn in different ways. And some people are more comfortable being in their own kitchen, and some people really want to be with a group and be social. And so what's coming up, I don't know if the community schools folks, Suzanne has been on yet, but I've got a community schools class coming up, Preserving Juno's Bounty. And that's going to actually be my first in-person class in the past, more than 18 months. And I'm actually really looking forward to that. And we are going to go ahead and hold that in person with all the appropriate mitigation efforts. And because there's just, when you do it in person together, I do know that people sometimes get to practice the skills a little more. They're a little bit more focused on practicing those skills if they are a person who really needs to kind of have that focus. And so I think having both options is a great idea for more people.
Yeah, actually, speaking from personal experience, since I have attended one of your online classes from my own kitchen, it would have been nice if I could have been like, hey, can you look at this? Does this look right? Do I have this lid
right,
or whatever set right? So I can definitely see the benefit. But of course, again, it is nice and convenient to just be able to zoom in from home and do everything along with you in my own kitchen. So, but I was just going to say, I feel like you have really dialed in your quarantine thing, as I called it. I don't know if you were teaching a lot of online classes before the pandemic, but I feel like you've tapped into a topic that people are really interested in. You found a way to share it with a wider audience. Your own shelves must be just sagging under the weight of everything you've put up after all these classes that you've taught. So how does it feel to be so in demand?
Oh, right. Right. No, and that's one thing that I'll actually also miss is when I start teaching in person again. What we do in those classes is everybody gets a little, half pint jar of all the different whatever we make, the different recipes. Whereas if you're cooking in your home, and when I'm cooking in my home with you, we do one really big batch that you can put on the shelf, quarts and quarts of stuff. And so that has been super nice. I have to say that's been nice. And so part of, one of the things that I'm going to be doing is this Preserving Juno's Bounty class. I will also be doing a Preserving Alaska's Bounty class. And that is actually my online course. And I'm going to start that up in January. And so that, of course, is available to anybody, anywhere. And it's got an online component, and it's got Zooms, but there are only about 2 hour Zooms. The most of what you would do is on your own time in your own kitchen with me as a resource and things like that. So that's a really fun thing that's going to be coming up in January as well on the food preservation line.
That's great. So I wanted to ask, I'm sure it depends on the class, but what are some of the basic supplies people need to cook along with you? Do you list it out for each course if people sign up?
I do. I try to do that. Yeah, I try to let people know what to have on hand. And you're right. It depends on the class. So if it's a dehydration class, if you have a dehydrator, that's great. But I may also teach you how to do things without some of that, specialized equipment. The exception to that is my pressure canning classes. You do have to have a pressure canner to do those, to can those particular products, low acid foods. But most of my other classes, I do try to give an idea of what you can do with just what you might have in your standard kitchen lineup, your stovetop, your oven, a knife, cutting board, you know, standard Tupperware, things like that.
So tonight's class is cooking mixes and sourdough starters. It is, a you know, if people weren't planning to take it, but they want to sign up at the last minute, what can they expect if they attend this one tonight?
Awesome. So tonight, so the sourdough starter one, I'll show you how to make a sourdough starter, but also give you some ideas about different ways. So you can either, I'm going to be showing the quick way of making a sourdough starter, but I'm also going to show you how to do the wild yeast sourdough starter, but you'll have to do that on your own over the next many days. And then I'm also going to be talking about all kinds of dry mixes, soup mixes, master baking mixes, rice mixes. They're mostly in the category of how to make dinner easier or quicker, but you could also use them for, you know, food on the boat, food for camping, because dry mixes can be more transportable and they're more ready to go. It's just add broth or add water, and maybe, you know, a few other simple ingredients. So they're for ease, but they're also for transport, which is, I think, a really great thing in Southeast Alaska with boating and hiking and skiing and all that kinds of stuff.
That's right. Yeah. So it'll be a variety of baking and cooking mixes and sourdough starter. I hadn't even really thought about the portability of some of those things. They would be great for boating or camping or hiking or backpacking,
yeah.
Nice and lightweight. And then next Tuesday's making and canning pickles. You'll be doing the refrigerator pickles and also water bath canning.
I will. I'm not going to be doing fermented pickles in that one. I'm going to be focusing on the canning with the whole sort of concept of getting things ready to put on the shelf for winter. And but if people have questions about fermented pickles, I'll certainly answer those. But it'll be focused on water bath canning.
Got it.
And refrigerator.
And the week after that is canning meat and vegetables. And finally, saving the best for last, making jerky.
Making jerky. That's just, yes. Yeah. We pretend like we make jerky to store it for a long period, but most people end up eating all of their jerky in less than a week because it's so good. The canning one, The canning one it's only an hour and a half. And so if you're someone who's just interested in starting to do pressure canning, this might be a good one because you can see me doing the process. I can answer questions about where to get canners, et cetera, without actually having to dive into the whole pressure canner world. This could be a good one for a starter.
That's great. And one fun note about your making jerky class, it doesn't have to be from an animal that you hunted. You will tell us how to make jerky from ingredients foraged from the local supermarket.
Absolutely. Absolutely both.
That's great. Well, they sound really fun and interesting, Sarah, and making me hungry, so we should probably just stop there. But I hope your workshop leaves a lot of well-stocked pantries, and thank you very much for joining us. Sarah Lewis, Assistant Professor with the Cooperative Extension Services. Anything else before we say goodbye?
That'll do it. Just Google Juno Extension to get to our website.
Well, thanks for joining us again today on Juno Afternoon, and good luck with your class tonight and over the next 4 weeks.
Thanks, Shelley. Bye-bye.
Bye. Take care.